Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer greatly from the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed on the third day and be raised. Then Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him. God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen. He turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle to me. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit would there be for one to gain the whole world and forfeit his life? Or what can one give in exchange for his life? For the Son of Man will come with his angels in his Father's glory, and then he will repay all according to his deeds." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to the Lord Jesus Christ.
So perhaps you will recall, it was just a couple of weeks ago here that I spoke to you about unanswered prayer. We talked about how over the years so many of you come to me sometimes with heavy crosses, heavy burdens, praying for good things, but very often for all of us, our prayers are answered not with Jesus stretching out his hand and pulling us into the boat in the storm, but with silence. That apparent silence of God. We reflected on the righteous Job and asked that ageless question, that question that has plagued mankind since the beginning of human history, namely, why do bad things happen to good people? Remember that? Today, Jesus sheds some light on that very difficult question for us, at least with regard to the relationship between discipleship and the mystery of suffering. Perhaps better put, the relationship between discipleship and the mystery of the cross. The cross. Now that message of the cross wasn't any easier for the disciples who first heard it than it is for those of us who hear it today. Yeah, they witnessed the miracles. They saw Jesus work his wonders. Yet, when Jesus begins to talk about the cross, the disciples immediately react against it, particularly Peter. This gospel that we just heard is an immediate continuation of where we left off last week. You recall Jesus asked the question initially, "Who do people say that I am?" But then gets to the more direct question of, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter, acting as the spokesman for the group, makes that great profession of faith and says that you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And Peter, who actually at that point is named Simon, is given a new name by Jesus. Jesus said to him, "From now on, you are Petra, Peter, rock, and on this rock I will build my church." And then immediately, Jesus begins to open up to them the mystery of suffering, the mystery of the cross. And Peter, our first pope, what is Peter? Impetuous Peter, what does he do? He pulls Jesus aside. At least he had enough sense to pull him aside. And he rebukes him. He rebukes Jesus. Right? He says, Imagine that. Imagine the audacity of Peter, a disciple, taking the master aside and basically saying, forget all this nonsense you're talking about. I want to tell you how it's going to be. And of course, Jesus takes none of it. He turns around. He turns his back to Peter and says, get behind me, Satan. So now he's giving Peter yet another name. Right? He just renamed Simon as Peter, the foundation of the church. Now he calls him Satan, the adversary of the church, the great enemy of the church. He says, get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle. It's interesting. If you look at the original Greek, that word that we use for obstacle, the original word is scandalon, from which we get our English word of scandal. The literal meaning of scandalon in Greek is a stumbling stone. One of those stones that you trip over on the road as you're walking. So there's really a pun here in the gospel. When Peter confessed his faith in Jesus as the Son of God, he was the rock Petra. But now that he's against the suffering of Jesus, he's become a scandalon, a stumbling stone. See, he's still a rock. He's just a different kind of a rock. Jesus speaks so harshly to Peter because the great mystery of our salvation, right? Jesus came in to save the world precisely through his passion, his death on the cross. So when Peter opposes that passion, he's basically opposing the salvation of the world. And so Jesus comes down on him like a ton of bricks and more rocks. But Jesus uses that state of Peter's as what we might call a teachable moment. He uses it as an opportunity to bring the disciples into yet even a deeper mystery, to teach them something further, namely the mystery of suffering and its relation to disciples. And Jesus lays out the conditions for being one of his disciples, one of his followers. He says, if you want to be my disciple, then if you want to come after me, you have to do two things. You have to deny yourself, and you have to take up your cross and follow me. That's what it means to be a disciple. But you know, today, when we hear that word disciple, particularly Christian disciple of Jesus and so forth, I think our minds tend to put the emphasis on certain doctrinal aspects of things. Like, I believe that Jesus is divine. I believe he is the Son of God. I believe he was born of the Virgin Mary. I believe he rose on the third day, so on and so forth. I believe all those things. Therefore, I am a disciple, a follower of Jesus. But remember, that's not what the word disciple literally means. Disciple means a student. And so, if you are a student, you just don't believe what the teacher says, but you imitate him. You act like him. You live like him. And so Jesus is saying, if you want to be my disciple, if you want to be my student, you have to do two things. You have to accept suffering, and you have to imitate me. And he uses a striking image of what it means to imitate him. He says you have to deny yourself, and then he says you have to take up your cross. Take up your cross. Again, today, we know what that means. We know what that metaphor means, that phrase, take up your cross. It's a way of saying we have to bear the sufferings that come our way every day. That's how we understand it today. Disciples wouldn't have understood that way. Calvary hadn't happened yet. For them, the cross was a means of execution and nothing more. The cross was the most brutal, heinous, shameful way to die at the hands of the Roman Empire in the first century AD. That was what the cross meant to them. So when Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you have to take up your cross, the equivalent today might be, if you want to be my disciple, you have to take up your electric chair and follow me. How's that for a shocking analogy? No, you laughed at that. Most people haven't laughed at that. I don't know why. Yet, that shocking analogy is exactly the way Jesus describes what it means to be a disciple. He's pulling no punches here in what's involved in being a disciple. He says you're going to have to accept suffering. And notice he says more than that. It's not that he just says you're going to suffer, but he says you have to take up your cross. In other words, you go, you pick it up, you carry it, you walk behind me, you imitate me, you follow me. Our natural inclination is what? Our natural inclination is to save our life. Our natural inclination is to avoid suffering, to flee from it as fast as we can, to run away from it. Yet, what does Jesus say? He says, whoever would save his life, paradoxically, ends up losing it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. So, although at a natural level we are all afraid to lose our life, the reality of it, we know, is that Jesus is the only one who can give life. So the paradox of discipleship is indeed the paradox of the cross. The only way to the glory of the resurrection is through Good Friday and Calvary. That was true for Jesus, and he's saying the same thing is going to be true for his disciples. In a certain sense, Jesus here lays out the cost of discipleship. He does so by asking the question. He said, what does it profit you if you were to gain the whole world but you lose your life? And again, that word life, psyche, means more than just your life. It means everything. Your body, your mind, your soul, your spirit, your whole being. You lose it all. In other words, is there enough money in the world? Is there enough gold that is so precious that it is enough to buy even one human soul? Of course not. So what he's saying is that if you want to be my disciple, well, at one level, it's not going to cost you anything. It's free. It's absolutely free. But yet, at another level, it's going to cost you everything. It's going to cost you your life. It's going to cost your heart, your soul, your mind, your strength, everything about you, because that's what the word disciple means. To love Jesus with everything you have, even if it means the death. And moreover, it's the only way to salvation. The only way. No other way. No other way. There's a secret here. There's a secret to sainthood here. That's what the saints discovered for themselves. That everything else amounts to nothing but rubbish, garbage. The only thing that matters is following Jesus with everything you've got, no matter what, no matter what. There's no doubt that this is a tough message. No doubt. The cross is the one aspect of Christianity that is not attractive. Look yourself at some of these televangelists, right, who preach the prosperity gospel. Yeah, you know what I mean by the preachers of the prosperity gospel? They have thousands upon thousands of people following them. And they say, if you are a true believer in Jesus, if you truly believe, you will be blessed. You will be blessed with money and power and wealth and fame and health and riches. Yet you look at the gospel, and what does Jesus say? He says, if you are my disciple, you're going to be blessed. You're going to be blessed with the cross. There's something for us to reflect on in a quiet moment today. To see our crosses as a blessing. To be blessed by our cross. You think about that in a quiet moment, because that's what Sundays are for. Yeah, we bear our crosses, but do we see them as a gift? Do we see them as a joy? Can we find joy in the suffering of bearing our cross? Do we take up the cross? Do we go and pick it up? I think in a certain sense we see a good example of that today in all the volunteer rescue workers that headed out to Texas and Louisiana. People, essentially from all over the country, are hitching up their flat-bottom boats and they're heading out to those states impacted by Hurricane Harvey to help with the rescue efforts. Is that something that they enjoy doing? I think not. I mean, nobody looks forward to, nobody wants to wade through filthy water, they're now saying toxic water, to go and rescue someone stranded in a car or stranded on the roof of the building. That's not anyone's idea of a good time. But do they find joy in doing it? Do they find a blessing in doing it? Yes, they do. The joy, the blessing that comes from helping those who are in distress. They have taken up the cross. All of us, unless you're very, very, very young, certainly Barron has not experienced the cross. I don't think Reagan has either. You know, none of the children here, maybe. Just wait. Every one of us will be given a cross. And remember, the cross that you're given is never the one you would have wanted for yourself, the one you would have chosen. How do we carry that cross? Do we grumble? Do we complain? Oh, woe is me. I've got this horrible cross I have to carry. Or do we pick it up? Do we embrace it? And do we carry it? Do you remember Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion? Remember that movie? But a hard movie to watch. You remember in the movie, in the scene where Jesus begins his journey to Calvary, what happened when he was given the cross? You remember what he did to the cross? He kissed it. He kissed the cross. No, that's not in the Bible. That's Mel Gibson using poetic license to make a dramatic point of what it means to pick up the cross, to embrace the cross, to, I dare say, love the cross, to see the cross as a gift, to see the cross as a blessing. You only kiss that which you love. You only kiss that which is a blessing. What a beautiful image of what it means to take up the cross, just as do the rescue workers today, the volunteers in Texas and Louisiana. I'll leave you with the words of St. Jose Maria Escriva, in one of his meditations entitled The Way of the Cross, he writes, "Don't drag the cross." I love that expression. Don't drag the cross. He says, carry it squarely on your shoulders, because your cross, if you carry it so, will not just be any cross, it will be the Holy Cross. Don't carry your cross with resignation. Resignation is not a generous word. Love the cross. When you love it, your cross will be a cross without a cross. And surely you will encounter Mary on the way, just as Jesus did. The scandal of the cross. Absolute foolishness in the eyes of the world. But with the eyes of faith, the very power of God. Let us pray for that grace of sainthood, to see our crosses as a blessing, to pick up our cross, to embrace our cross, to learn to love our cross, even to kiss our cross, and then place it squarely on our shoulders and follow after Jesus.